Hey, you guys. It's Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I had never seen this movie.
See, that amazes me.
I had heard about it, but I thought they were talking about a movie from the 2000s.
No.
Okay.
No.
So, I find out this bitch is from 1987. I watch it. This fucking movie's fucking awesome, man.
See, I knew you would like it.
I had no idea this movie existed. It had half the cast of aliens in it.
I know, it's really interesting. Well, yeah. Catherine Bigelow, who directed it, this was actually her first solo directing job. Yeah. Well, she was married to James Cameron for a little while. She wasn't married to him when this was made, but I think she married him like a year or two after.
They passed the damn movie theater downtown, and on the back, Aliens was playing. You could see it up on the kiosk and
yeah.
shit. Yeah. It was because they had Bill Paxton in there, had that woman, that girl that played
Vasquez,
and it even had the dude who played Bishop.
Yeah.
And it's a vampire flick.
And also, one of the guys in the bar during that iconic scene was the guy that in Terminator 2
uh-huh.
that the T-800 or whatever like stole the clothes from.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
So there was another like little crossover.
And then this is a good flick because it's vampires in the South. And you got a damn cowboy who gets turned into a vampire. Young cowboy, he's kind of like the dashing, kind of like leading man type. He's like the hero. And then they got this band of damn dirty fucking vampiric fucking bikers. Kind of like scooter trash. Yeah. But like one of them's an old Confederate soldier who's running the shit. He's fought in the Civil War and everything. It's fucking badass. That's the dude that played fucking Bishop. What's his name?
Lance Hendrickson.
Yeah.
And he was in Pumpkinhead. Also.
Yeah.
And he's been in a ton of shit, obviously.
This bitch here, man. Fucking, if you haven't seen this, you got to see it. This is like.
Well, it's like a Western, essentially, but like, with vampires.
It's like I think this predates Interview with the Vampire, but you could see a lot of Anne Rice lore in this.
Well, it predates the movie.
That's what I meant. You can see a lot of Anne Rice lore in it, and it goes right along with Interview with the Vampire. It's not quite as classy, you know. It doesn't go back to like the 1700s, you know, with all that frilly shit, you know what I mean? Even though I fucking love Interview with the Vampire. Tom Cruise fucking rocked that movie. I don't give a shit what Jenny says. But anyway,
I said he was good in that. I've always said he was good in that.
So this cowboy gets turned into a vampire. He's forced to hang out with these damn bikers, basically. They're vampires doing fucking nasty-ass shit. They're trying to make him kill people and stuff. He's kind of like Louis in a way. And then they got this hot girl with him, and she was the girl from The Wall. She was the one. She played the teenage girl who had to blow her way in behind stage to get to Pink. And then she kicks her out of the room during The Wall. It's that same girl. She's cute as shit. She looks real young, but she's pushing 30 in it if the numbers were right.
Jenny Wright is her name. I recognized her from, she was also in St. Elmo's Fire, although she didn't have a real big role in that. She was like Rob Lowe's ex-wife, I think.
Okay.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
She looked like she was a teenager in this movie, but she was in her late 20s at the time.
Yeah.
But she was very well preserved for late 20s.
Well, I kind of feel like most people still look okay in their mid-20s. Yeah, most people don't start looking real hard until their late 30s.
She looked real fucking soft, though. She looked like a 15 or 16-year-old girl to me.
Well, maybe that's just because we're old.
Maybe because we're old. No, I know what I'm talking about. I'm pretty good. I can estimate pretty well women's age and what they're supposed to look like. But, this is a great movie. There's a lot of things about it that make it great. It's got a fucking great score. It's what you would call nowadays fucking new retro wave, which is coming back into style. It's got fucking really cool 80s shots, colors, and sounds. And it went from 80s new wave score to power metal. 80s power metal. Sometimes. It was fucking really good.
It's had that John Parr song, Naughty Naughty, in it. God, I hated that song when that came out.
Well, you're talking about In the Bar?
It was In the Bar. Like,
yeah, there's shit happening in the background. I'm talking about the actual score.
Yeah.
The score actually.
No, I know. I just thought of that.
During some of the action scenes, they're playing fucking power metal and stuff. You know, no lyrics, just. And I was going, oh man, that's a fucking really good score. And just the way everything's shot and the fucking filters and the cut and the acting and everything, it's not real heavy dialogue based. It's situational, and it's an adventure. It's just a good movie. Real good movie. I can't believe I had not seen it.
I was going to say, speaking of music, I really liked also in the bar scene, they had the Cramps version of Fever in the back, which, you know, as the every movie should have that because it's like a wonderful cover because I love the Cramps. But yeah, so somebody already brought up Lost Boys. Yeah. So what ended up happening with this?
This was better than Lost Boys.
Yeah, a lot of people like this one better. I'm not really sure. They're kind of, it's weird because... Yeah, on the surface, you wouldn't really think it. It's like, yeah, they're both vampire movies, but when you think about it, it's essentially the same story.
Similar, yeah.
As Lost Boys, you know, in the sense that this person, you know, this guy, young guy, gets sucked into, like with a vampire gang, gets sucked in by a hot woman, and then, you know, they're trying to make him kill people, and he's like really kind of... you know, conflicted about it. So it's kind of like the same story as The Lost Boys, but I guess it didn't immediately occur to me because the just the approach of it is so different. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This one, I kind of feel like what ended up happening with this, unfortunately, is that The Lost Boys had come out only, I think, 2 months before this. And it was just kind of like a coincidence that they were very similar. And Lost Boys, I mean, obviously was hugely successful. This one, really not so much. It didn't make its movie back, or didn't make its money back in the theater. And it didn't help either that she had to get the money, like Kathryn Bigelow, she had to get the money from Dino De Laurentiis' group. And they, I think, went bankrupt, like, before this came out, so they didn't really have the money to, like, promote it. So
this
I think
is a Dino De Laurentiis movie. Another great one.
Yeah, the thing about it, like I said, Kathryn Bigelow, you know, she had done, like, some co-writing and, like, some co-directing prior to this, but this was the first movie that she had done, you know, directing on her own. She actually wanted to do a Western, but... because she couldn't get the funding, because, you know, this was 87, no one was really doing Westerns, it wasn't really, you know, a property that anybody wanted to look at. So somebody, like, recommended, well, why don't you, if you want to do a Western so bad, why don't you crossbreed a Western with something else? And then she's like, okay, well, I'll do a Western-style vampire movie. Like I said, not really. I don't think there was any anything going on like where they knew the Lost Boys. I mean, Fright Night had come out a couple years before, so vampires were kind of like in the zeitgeist. I guess there were a lot
I like this much better than Fright Night too. This
honestly,
in the comments said this is their favorite vampire movie.
This is a lot of people's favorite vampire
movie. I think
so.
I'm gonna put this right there with Interview with the Vampire.
And it's underseen.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly,
they're saying I can't. Louis is like, I can't believe you hadn't seen this.
I couldn't believe you hadn't seen it either because I said this was like just like right up your alley. This is exactly the type of movie that you
1987,
like.
1987. I was in my senior year of high school. I was in Brazil, so I was, and it. You know what I mean? I really wasn't going to movies, and it wouldn't have had an on-time theatrical release in Brazil anyway, and it would have been subtitled with fucking shitty. I wouldn't, and I was too fucking busy fucking doing what I was doing in 87, which was chasing girls and shit. So, and then by got out, I went back to Michigan for a while, ended up in Detroit in the goth scene, and I didn't even have a VHS player in 87 or 88, so I couldn't have rented it. You know?
And as I said, because Lost Boys, as far as vampire movies went, was such like a juggernaut, I guess.
Yeah.
And this one didn't really get the same, you know, it didn't even make, I think it cost $5 million to make, and I think it only made like $3.5 million back.
I did not even know about this movie.
Well, I think a lot of people don't. And it's like a lot of people didn't know about it back then. And I kind of feel like even nowadays, it's still a little bit under the radar. I feel like even people that are into 80s movies, I mean, everybody's seen The Lost Boys, right? Yeah. But I feel like Near Dark is kind of like, you know, two or three tiers down. It's kind of one of those ones that, you know, but most people that see it are like, oh my God, where's this movie been all my life? But it's like, it just doesn't really get the recognition that Lost Boys gets.
It's like watching Terminator 1. And Aliens and Terminator 2, it's right there with, but it's a vampire movie. Cowboys versus bikers.
I like that it's kind of like a grounded vampire movie. It's not like, it's supernatural, obviously, because they're vampires, but it's not like, they don't focus on that.
They're just characters in the story.
Fourth drawer down says, Lost Boys is the Beatles, Near Dark is the Stones. And somebody said, that is a good analogy. Yeah. This is like a very grungy, I like that it kind of, and you don't really see a lot of vampire movies that do this, because I feel like the Lost Boys, and I love the Lost Boys, okay, but that one, even though it was kind of like, oh, these bad boy rock star vampires, which this is kind of like that too, but
they're not pretty boys, though.
But yeah, in Lost Boys, it's more like glamorous.
Yeah, it's like glamorous.
This one is kind of like, they're all kind of like scuzzy lowlifes a little bit, and it's like, and it kind of focuses a lot on their day-to-day struggle or their day-to-day grind, where they essentially have to like just drive around in a bus that they have to like sunproof, you know, because the sun will still kill them. And when they go places and they kill people to drink them, you know, they have to like keep switching vehicles and they have to keep like hiding out because it's like, you know, they don't want to get arrested, even though they're not, I mean, it's, you know, they get shot and stuff like that. It doesn't kill them.
This is one of Paxton's biggest roles.
He's so great in this.
Yeah. I don't think it's his best work, but I think it is good. It is great. I think his best work was the one where, remember that he was out fucking catching demons and killing them, and you think he's crazy? He's
Frailty.
Yeah.
We did a review on that back then.
I think
that's probably my favorite. That was his best because work. He directed that too.
He directed it, and he was the main character. I bought it. I want to get that movie. That's a great fucking movie.
That's another one that a lot of people. Yeah. That I feel like if you're just kind of like, I feel like real hardcore like horror people like have seen it, but I kind of feel like if you're just kind of casual, you haven't really seen it.
I can't believe that dude died.
I can't believe that either.
Yeah.
I was watching another like horror, if you think it was Sinister Cinema, and he was talking about Near Dark, and he had just like a couple of days prior to him recording the review of it, he had actually met Lance Henriksen at a horror convention, and he said that he got into a long conversation about Bill Paxton and about Lance Henriksen, just talking about what an awesome dude Bill Paxton was and how sad it was that like he died so like relatively young.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it was cancer, wasn't it?
I can't remember now. I can't remember what he died of. But
he wasn't that old.
No.
I think he was in his 50s, wasn't he?
I can't remember. You'd have to look it up. He asked me questions like I'm Google. I don't know.
Well, sometimes she does know.
But I can't remember. Like, I can't remember offhand.
Yeah, but I can't believe I didn't see this one.
That's what I was... And I told him that last night because it's like... this one, it seems like kind of hard to get hold of. There's like a special edition, but I even looked on which, and the new cover is cool and everything like that, but I looked on Amazon.
We're going to get this.
Well, I looked on Amazon and I couldn't find, like they had the special edition, but it was only region 2.
Yeah.
And it was like, because it came out in France.
Right.
And then they had a German version, but I don't see one that's like the U.S. version. I don't know if it's just not available or it's like, and I kind of feel like, for it now, it's on Prime Video and it's on Shudder, even though I think DJ Maniac told me that Shudder was taking it down at the end of August because they only had limited rights to it. There's kind of a lot of, I guess it was a lot of like maneuvering behind the scenes because the Dino De Laurentiis group went out of, went out of business like right around the time or a little bit after. So I feel like there was a lot of complications with the rights issues. So sometimes it's really hard to get hold of this movie.
Yeah. Some people bag on Dino, man, but fucking... That studio, they didn't know how to run a studio. I mean, they fucking wasted a lot of money. They made a lot of fucking poor decisions when it came to money. But that studio, when it was around, was extremely ballsy about bringing really oddball productions to fruition. You know, Flash Gordon, Conan 1. They did Conan 2. What else did they do? Fucking Dune. Just real ball... This movie... They probably brought out a bunch of fucking losers, too, that are long forgotten. But, man, the shit that was cool, man, and it was really cool. It didn't really do too well at the box office.
Well, neither did this one, but then, you know.
But you look back on it, and you go like, man, it was ahead of its time. A lot of the shit they did was ahead of its time.
Well, like I said, I like that they grounded, you know, even though they had superpowers in the sense that you could shoot them and they wouldn't fall down and they were super strong and stuff, but they didn't really have any other, they didn't really go a lot into, like, vampire lore. They were just, like, regular people. They didn't have fangs. They didn't say anything about, like, you know, crosses or garlic or any of your regular kind of shit.
I think they did have fangs, just they didn't do close-ups, so you didn't really see them.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they were biting people. And
yeah, they did bite people in the neck, and it did look like there was, like, traditional.
I think they wanted to stay away from that stereotypical cheesy-ass effect of the fake teeth on the mouth. I think that's what they were trying to get away with.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
It was just suggested that they had teeth. Yeah. Because they could bite. Yeah.
Which, but I guess would make more sense.
I would put, based on what I saw, it was kind of like an Anne Rice vampire lore in terms of what they could do. They didn't show anybody float, you know, or levitate.
Yeah, that's what
but
I
you
mean.
You didn't see that in Interview with the Vampire either, the movie.
That's true.
And it was only kind of mentioned a couple times in the books that they could just kind of levitate, hover and levitate a little bit. You know, and then later on, they're fucking straight up flying.
Yeah.
Like a superhero.
Louis says Bill Paxton was 61.
61,
and
okay.
Died of complications from surgery. He had he had cardiac bypass and okay. didn't wake up from the anesthesia.
Oh, shit. So he was older than I thought he was.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but still, 61 is
well, that's much still younger than people should be dying nowadays. I mean, I know it happens, but... yeah, and Pat's saying, I don't think the word vampire is ever used in the movie.
No.
Yeah, I don't think it is, because, I mean...
He didn't know what was wrong with him.
If you had never... Yeah, if you had never seen this movie before, I mean, it's not called, you know, anything with the vampire, this or that, or the other thing. It's just called Near Dark. That can mean a lot of things. So, if you didn't know that it was a vampire movie... for a long time, I mean, basically, it's just this dude, the cowboy, Caleb, and he meets May, Jenny Raitt's character, and, you know, they kind of hit it off, and even though he's a little bit creepy and a little rapey at the beginning, like, hey, I'm not going to let you out of the car until
he's
you, like,
boy.
Yeah, that kind of thing, so there's that.
He's good looking enough to get away with it, though.
Well, I don't know about that, but okay.
This is the 80s, man. Well, this country.
Yeah.
He was taking his hat off when he was talking to her.
He was always taking his hat up like this, like that very genteel, like that's
doing his cowboy shit.
That's very funny. Yeah. But yeah, so for a long time, like there's this kind of weird tension. Like, you know that there's something weird about her because she says weird things. Like, she wants to go out and she's like, do you hear the night? And it's like, and she says the weird thing about the stars where it's like, you know, see that star and it's like, you know, the light from that is not going to get here for a billion years and I'll still be here when that light gets here. So you know that, I mean, obviously I know it was a vampire movie because I've seen it before, but it's like, if you didn't know that it was a vampire movie, you'd just be like, what the fuck is this chick's deal? And then, so it goes on a long time before, and it's almost kind of like, and I don't know if this was intentional, I'm imagining it probably was, but it almost kind of goes like I said, with him being a little bit like creepy and overbearing, it almost seems like it could go the other way, like he's victimizing her, but then she's kind of like, okay, fine, I'll kiss you, and then she bites him on the neck and he doesn't really know what's going on. I should note that I think that one of the writers on this, if I'm remembering correctly, was one of the writers on The Hitcher, and this kind of gives me the same vibe as that. This is in the same ballpark as The Hitcher, even though The Hitcher was kind of more like a slasher movie sort of thing, like a slasher road movie, I guess.
Hold on, somebody asked me a question. Tom's Inglourious Bastard says, we need another Flash Gordon. Who could play the role, Tom? That German guy who was in that fucking horror movie that we saw. Do you remember that guy's name? Or what?
I can't remember his name.
Remember the name of that movie?
No, that was a while back. I remember you talking about it, but I can't remember.
They got a German actor who played a bad guy in one of these horror movies. He's fucking definitely not natural. He's on some heavy HRT and probably doing some cycles of fucking VAR or something. But he's not real overbuilt. He just looks like... He's blonde, and he has that same exact face that was in the Flash Gordon comics. The illustrated one from back in the 20s and the 30s. He looks just like that. And I sent him a message, and he's an acrobat. He's real athletic. He's acrobatic. Fucking, he does fencing and all that shit. And after that movie, I did a little bit of research on him because Jenny was like, boy, he looks just like Flash Gordon. And I said, he fucking does. And this is around the time where that new Flash Gordon Blu-ray was coming out, the remastered Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And I fucking sent him a message on fucking Instagram real quick. And I said, man, remember a girlfriend was watching you in this movie? I forgot the name of that damn movie. Maybe you guys might remember.
It was one we did a matinee on. I'd have to go back. And I would know if I scrolled through the titles. I would remember.
I said, you look just like an illustration of fucking Flash Gordon. You would make an awesome Flash Gordon. I said, fucking tell your manager that you need a photo shoot of that because they'll probably be making a new Flash Gordon one of these days. They need to get you. And he didn't answer. He just thumbs up what I said. That was it. But I don't know how his English is good, but you could always dub him. The fucking the Dealer Do the Rentis guys was dubbed.
Yeah.
But, you know, because you'd want a retro accent. And with all the CG, after seeing that Aquaman, because Aquaman kind of reminded me of Flash Gordon, the underwater shit.
Yeah.
After seeing that, I was like, man, you could do a badass Flash Gordon nowadays with CG. But it cannot be a modern fucking Flash Gordon. It has to look like Art Deco. It has to look like the old cartoons.
Yeah.
Or, you know. Okay, that's all I want to say about that.
David Haley said, please review Manhunter. That's actually on the list because I've been wanting to do that for a long time. I really love that movie. Tom's and Glorious Bastards also says, you need to review Blackenstein. You know,
bad movie.
I didn't love Blackenstein. Yeah. I got to say, look, I love Blackula and Scream, Blackula, Scream are two of my favorite vampire movies of all time. So of course, I wanted to watch, Blackenstein too. And it just wasn't...
The production quality is not there. That'd make a good MST.
It would probably.
It'd make a real good...
It seemed... it's been a while since...
Riff Trax. I wonder if Riff Trax has done it.
Probably, because they've done fucking everything.
Yeah.
Well, the nice thing about Riff Trax, in the sense that now that you can download just the MP3 file, they don't need the movie to go along with it. So they can do any movie that they want to, because they don't run into rights issues. So they branched out from doing just shitty movies that, you know, that they could get for cheap to now they can do ones for good movies too, which is awesome. But I kind of feel like they've done so many movies that they must have done Blackenstein. They must have.
Yeah.
Somebody also said we need to do Chud.
Yeah, I kind of remember that one. That was the one where the guy's head blew up and there was an alien inside of him or something like that.
That was Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dwellers.
Okay.
That all the ones that lived in the sewers. I remember seeing those a lot, on cable, back in the day. It was Chud, and then there was Chud 2, Bud the Chud.
There was one that I saw where a guy got bitten by some kind of alien or something. He started to transform. It was in the 80s, kind of the early 80s. And his head fucking blew up like a balloon. He slowly started to transform.
Oh, that's, it's not extra shit, weird. Man. Fuck, man. I can see it. I can see the poster.
Yeah.
I can see the poster.
It was, at the time, we were really creeped out by it. Shit. Saw it in 84.
And I saw it not too long ago. What the fuck is
didn't
the name of that
something
movie?
Growing on his back, and he started to...
Okay.
His mom, and his mom didn't know what was wrong with him.
There might be two different movies that you're conflating. There is a movie called Brain Damage... That's the one that has the little thing growing out of the guy's the back of the thing. But then there's another movie. What is it called?
It's not Extra.
Is it called The Beast Must Die?
Beast.
Where the dude's face is blowing up.
Beast Man or something, or Beast.
I think there's one called The Beast Must Die. I think that has that poster with the dude's head getting really big,
like a balloon.
But Brain Damage is the one that has he has little alien creature or whatever that's growing
maybe
out of the back of his neck. The little guy named
Remember his head blew up and it had
the Beast Within. That's
Beast Within.
That's what it's called.
Beast Within.
I knew it was The Beast something.
Yeah, Beast Within. That's it. Beast Within.
Yeah, because I could see... Well, yeah, because I kept thinking The Beast.
Out.
Yeah, yeah.
That shit tripped me out, man. As I've been 84, I was fucking in mid-teens. I was just going, oh, shit. And that was the most graphic movie we had seen up to that point, I think. I remembered it being fucking more hardcore than The Thing. I don't know if it was, but I just remembered it being scarier than The Thing for the time.
I don't know.
It's
maybe
cheesy if I see it now.
I think it is because I saw it probably about
at the time.
That's probably what it was. I saw it 3 or 4 years ago. I want to say
felt all illicit.
And,
you weren't supposed to be watching.
And I didn't remember it being terribly scary. Although it was pretty gory, but I don't think it was more gory than The Thing.
Okay, I don't remember which one I saw first. Maybe I saw that before I saw The Thing. I don't know. It's been a long time.
Have you guys done The Fly 1 and 2? You know what? I don't have. We haven't done The Fly yet, have we? The David Cronenberg one.
No.
Shit, we should. And the second one's actually not too bad either, the one with Eric Stoltz.
Beast Within. Yeah, I got
The Beast Must Die, that's the werewolf movie, that's right. I forgot about that. I was just looking at that title of that the other day.
Extro was the one where the fucking had the little walking soldiers and the alien powers. I think it ended up being a good guy, wasn't it? Yeah.
No, it wasn't a good guy.
Wasn't a good guy? Okay.
That was a weird movie.
And they were eating little gelatins and jellies were turned into monsters.
Well, there was a whole...
Little egg monster jellies or something.
Well, no, there was a whole bunch of eggs.
That's what it was.
And the funny thing about Extro is that, you know, the one scene where, I mean, you do get to see like a full grown man alien come out of a woman's vagina. So that's something.
Yeah.
You know, in case anyone wanted to be recommended.
We were watching those around the same time. So they were getting kind of conflated.
Well, me and you watched it not too long ago, like a few years back. Yeah, and then there was, and then, you know, the scene where one of the aliens has like, it's like this, it's crawling on all fours, but it's like legs and backwards, stuff are like on backwards.
Yeah.
I've seen that footage because I think a lot of people haven't seen Extro. It's kind of a little more obscure. I think it's British. And I've seen that scene from that movie like put on YouTube as like, oh my God, real monster sighting, because I think people don't realize that that's from a movie, but it's totally from a movie. It's from Extro. But it's like, it's a creepy scene, like this thing like running across the road, like with its legs all backwards and stuff. But it's just...
It's a man doing this.
Yeah, sort of. Well, yeah, like it's yeah, it's weird. It's weird. But, yeah, Sheila Ann said, whatever happened to Jenny Wright, so big back then. Yeah, she was in a bunch of shit, and then she just kind of, like, disappeared.
I saw a picture of her recently. She's unrecognizable.
Yeah, well...
Hard living, it looks like to me.
but like I said, she was in a lot of movies, like, around this time period, like, in the 80s, and then... But I kind of feel like that happened to a lot of people back then. But yeah, so...
I don't know. Well, that girl we saw, that woman we saw from the other night in that damn vampire movie. Barbara Crampton's fucking smoking hot at 62.
Yeah. But that's not... I mean, that's... She's kind of a little bit of an exception to the rule.
Yeah.
You know? Gotta say. Most women, when they're 62, like, don't look that good.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Although, like I said, it's, you know, it's better now than it used to be, now that everybody's kind of like...
People understand health.
Understand things, and it's like, you know, there's a lot more shit that you can do to keep yourself from, like, looking like...
Yeah, and don't snort...
Like
up,
an old hag.
Don't snort up all the blow, and don't drink a fifth of fucking vodka every night, you know? Fucking...
Well, it's just... That's just good all-around life advice.
that's another thing. People look up these old stars. You cannot judge stars by... they're not accurate judges of the aging process. Some of them seem to never age, and other ones, by the time they're 60, they're just fucking totally unrecognizable. And it's because of the Hollywood scene, man. They're doing so many drugs. You know, a lot of drugs and a lot of alcohol abuse, especially certain generations.
And the thing about it is that I think there is a genetic component, too, because some people can get away with it for longer. It eventually catches up with you, like, no matter what you do. And also, I kind of think that some people are more willing to, like, you know, for example, go get surgery or something
like
that.
Well, that's what I was
going to
say.
Yeah, so it does kind of come down to the individual in some
ways. The ones that are abusing substances are fucking... Stop being shown in movies because they look like shit. So you don't see them. You go back and look for them and you're like, God damn. And it's because they've drunk themselves to death and done a lot of drugs and partying.
Yeah.
They almost look like homeless people, some of them. Some of them might be homeless people. I think Nick Nolte was kind of a homeless guy, wasn't he, for a while?
I'm not sure if he was exactly homeless, but they do kind of... Because there's a running gag on riff tracks, like, from movie to movie, because Mike Nelson does, like, a really good Nick Nolte impression. So he's always... Every time there's a shot in a movie, whatever it is, of, like, a bomb or something like that, he'll do the Nick Nolte voice.
Under the impression that he's couch surfs and it was kind of...
Maybe.
And is kind of homeless, or at least at certain periods.
Yeah.
And he's definitely fucking crazy. All right. He did some good performances, though. So you end up with kind of a fucking bum mentality on a lot of them. And other ones have enough money to where they can just do fucking fantastic fucking hormone therapies and just keep cutting flesh off and nipping and tucking. Small procedures every couple of years. You can fucking stay on top of the shit. I mean, Cher was doing that forever. I haven't seen her in a long time. But at 40, Cher looked about like 25 when she wanted to look that young. Depending on how she was dressing.
Danny Rowling asks what our favorite parts of Near Dark were. Okay, so I think most people are going to say that extended bar scene, like that 10-minute long kind of bar thing where they come in the bar and start like fucking with people and stuff, which is a great iconic scene. But you know what? I think my favorite scene was the one at the end where the kid vampire, Homer, when they're like, you know, when Caleb is going to get like his sister back, And May kind of essentially tries to, like, sacrifice herself. Like, she jumps out the car with the little girl, and it's, like, you know, giving her back. And then the kid vampire Homer goes, like, running down the road in the middle of the day, like, after, like, this, she's mine, she's mine. And then, like, he just starts burning up. And for 1987, that was a really good fire effect. Yeah. I was surprised. And then he essentially explodes.
Yeah, I was going to say, the shootout rescue scene where he runs the dam...
That was great too.
In there to get runs the van into
and all
hotel,
all the gunshots are coming in with all the little like the things shafts of sunlight, and they're all like the smoke and everything coming out of them, and then like
they
he comes into
up around all the windows so the sunlight can't.
And they had spray paint too, like they were spray paint. I said, oh, that's nice. They like prepared for everything. They have like big bags full of like duct tape and black spray paint and tinfoil and shit. And it's every time they like steal a vehicle, they have to like sunproof it.
Yeah.
You would think, well, like I said, they don't really, it's interesting because they don't really imply, you know that Jesse, like Lance Henriksen's character, you know that he's been alive at least since the Civil War because he said that he fought in the Civil War. And so, but some of the other ones, and I think May hasn't been a vampire that long because I think she says, she makes a reference to like not having been a vampire that long. And the interesting thing though is that the kid vampire, Homer, is implied, I think they imply that Homer is the oldest one, although they don't, because they all the other ones call him old man. Yeah. So it's interesting because, like you said, like Anne Rice kind of went into the kid vampire thing. Lost Boys, they also had a kid vampire, although I think he got changed back at the end, like when they killed the head vampire. You know, so he didn't stay a vampire. But it was interesting, and here's something that a lot of people brought up, is that when Homer, the old, you know, the kid vampire that's actually an old man, goes after Caleb's little sister, Sarah, who's, what, 10 or 12 or however old she is? And that seems a little weird because even though, you know, Homer looks like a kid, he's actually an old man, but he's in a kid body. And so some people were like, well, that seems really weird, like he's a pedophile or something, but... Just from the optics, I thought the implication in the movie was that Homer had made May into a vampire with the hopes of her being his companion, but because she was an older woman, like she was a high school student or, you know, or in her 20s or whatever when she got turned, maybe she still perceives him as a kid even though he's an old man. You know what I'm saying? So it's like maybe Homer feels like he doesn't have any choice except to like turn a kid into a vampire who will kind of be like, you know, even though that kid will also...
That kid will age 10 years
be
later.
Be an adult. Yeah, so like I said, they kind of went into the same thing with Claudia in, you know, the Anne Rice stories, even though, you know, she had a lot... She got it kind of a lot shittier. Because like I said, in the movie, she's... How old was Kirsten Dunst when she did that movie? 12, 14? Something
12,
like that? In the book, Claudia was 6.
She looked a lot younger.
In the book, Claudia was 6.
Yeah.
So which would have been really fucked up like in a movie, but can you imagine being turned into a vampire when you're 6 years old? God damn, that would suck hard.
Somebody says, this is fourth row down, says, can I suggest the Lost Krussel movie called The Mean Season?
I've heard of that. Was that based on something else? Was that based on a...
Set in Florida, I don't know.
Oh, okay. I kind of feel like I've heard of that, and I didn't know if it was based on a book or if it was based on like a real case or
Mike
something
Barrett
like
says,
that.
Mike says, there's an interview with Jenny Wright on YouTube. Lots of drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, see it all. There you go.
Yeah.
Hugo said, I like when they're all smoking.
Tom says, Tom's a glorious bastard, says, Zardoz is what a director looks like on drugs look like. Well, Zardoz, though, actually, I want to buy that.
Except that's kind of like accidentally genius, just because it's so fucking bonkers.
I don't think it's that. I don't think it was an accident. That director did a really good job on Excalibur. Excalibur is one of my favorite movies. If you guys haven't seen it, you should see it. You know, it's kind of like Le Morte d'Arthur.
Yeah, it's John Borman, right?
Yeah, I think is what his name is. Zardoz is actually fucking pretty intelligent when you think about it. It's a breakaway civilization of a bunch of kind of like, you know, hippie type fucking intellectuals that live in paradise, and then they're using people to depopulate the planet, and a big fucking head comes and it's using religion and giving people guns, and he goes, fucking guns are good, the penis is evil, and fucking, you know.
It's a crazy movie, you guys, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, well, what's his name is like the enforcer for the... he's just fucking worshiping Zardoz. who's his god, but it's really just a flying fucking robot head that the rich people use to fool him into killing and enslaving everybody on the planet. And they're keeping records of his computer records over what he does, how many women he's raped and how many women he's killed. It's just, he's getting like high scores. It's fucking bizarre when you think about it. But they got that. That was part of a series of movies that were coming out around that time, like Soylent Green and Omega Man, and where they're looking at UN writings that talk about fucking depopulation agendas and shit, that and global warming or global cooling or whatever. That's what they're getting at. That's what they're talking about. Man-made depopulations and disasters that the elites want to do to everybody else. I thought it was a genius movie. I want to see it again. I liked it. I own it.
It's bonkers.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, I forgot to point out when you were talking about the score of this movie that Tangerine Dream did it.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Remember? That's right. So good. Yeah. That's right. I remember that.
They did a bunch of movies. Just Bees for Now says, never seen this, but don't see how it can beat Fright Night. Well,
that's
okay.
Better than Fright Night.
No, I'm not going to say that. It's hard to say because Fright Night is, it's just a totally, totally different vibe. Yeah. Like I said, this is more like, the story is kind of similar to The Lost Boys, but in tone, it's more like The Hitcher. It's like The Hitcher meets The Lost Boys. Kind of. If that makes any sense. And it's kind of also like a Western. You know what I mean? So it's kind of this gritty, scuzzy, you know, it's just these vampires driving around. But like I said, they don't call them vampires. There's nothing like...
That's what they are.
That's what they are, but they're not like... They're basically just going around just like predators, but they're also this kind of like weird, fucked up like family.
Yeah.
So they're almost like, even though they're kind of scuzz bags, but they're a little bit sympathetic too.
In the movie, in this universe, they don't have the term vampire. They have vampire, just like in some zombie movies, they never use the word.
They don't.
No one uses
the Z word.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Okay, now most people, like I said, that have seen this movie love this movie, but one criticism that I see of this a lot is that people don't like the end because they think the end is a cop out. Did you think the end was a cop-out?
No.
I don't either, but I can see how people would think that, though.
I know what they did, though. I remember 87 quite clearly. People liked to have happy endings in movies. They didn't like a depressing ending. They liked to walk out of the theater feeling good, like you saw something, oh, yeah, it all worked out. That's what they were going for back then. Some studios would actually make directors change the endings of the movies to make it end happily.
Well, we just went on a whole thing about Little Shop of Horrors about that, which will be up later in the week about they had to take that whole ending out because
artistically not that good. But I remember those times, and a lot of it had to do with their you had cable, but televisions was CRT television. It was low resolution. It looked like shit, really. VHS. Recordings, VHS machines were out there, but they were very expensive. You're talking about over $1,000. And video rental was really not really... it was a thing at this point. But to buy a video movie was over $100-something just to have a fucking VHS tape.
Yeah, so to buy them were like really expensive.
Yeah, fucking ridiculous, because they wanted to keep control over fucking factory movies. That didn't last long, though. So... What was happening was you had people basically of all walks of life. A lot of them would be what you would call today housewives, going to the movies to blow off steam and escape reality for a couple hours, and they wanted to leave it and come out of the theater in a positive mood because they didn't want anything heavier, you know, depressing. So the theaters kind of knew this. It was not about art. It was more about getting people sitting in a damn fucking theater seat, selling tickets, which that's good. What they should have done in these cases where they changed the end of the movie, they should have preserved all that shit. So when you could sell two different versions of it on VHS, is what they should have done.
Although I kind of feel like they weren't thinking that far ahead, because nowadays, you know, nobody cares. It's like, oh, even if we have to take this scene out, we'll just put it on the Blu-ray, and it's like in the deleted scene, so people still get to see it. Back then, you didn't really get that, particularly when it was, you know, when shit was just on video.
Right.
Very, very rare for you to have, like, a deleted scenes at the end of the VHS. You didn't really get that. There wasn't, like, special shit on it.
What I would have done, although it probably wouldn't have occurred to me at the time, I would have... If I'd owned those studios and had rights to fucking make and sell the VHS tapes, I would have sold two different VHS tapes. One of them a director's cut, the other one theatrical cut, and fucking double dipped on the shit.
Some studios did like get in on that pretty early, but I feel like it wasn't really a thing until later, because I feel like it wasn't a thing until like Laserdisc became briefly a thing, because there was a lot more, you know, memory on there. Yeah. And it's like they were trying to get people to buy Laserdiscs, which were expensive, and Laserdisc player, which was expensive. So a lot of people were like, oh, look at all these special features. We have this documentary about the making of and like deleted scenes and stuff. And so I kind of feel like...
I remember when that came, that was a weird concept, because in 87, there was just the movie. It's just a movie. This idea of a director's cut and a theatrical cut, I wouldn't have known what the fuck you were talking about. And I would imagine the average person wouldn't have known what the fuck you were talking about. Only like a movie buff would know what a director's cut was.
Yeah, well, because back like I said, even way back in the old days, it's like there's always been like different like varying cuts of movies.
Yeah.
You know, going back to the beginning of cinema, because you have different markets. It's like, you know, for we can have more nakedness in the European version than the American version or whatever it was. But yeah, I kind of feel like the public at large wasn't really that aware of that until later on.
Yeah, some of them were so badly cut up that they don't know fucking what the original was, and they're not sure how many movies have been spliced together, like Phantom of the Opera. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Phantom of the Opera is like three different movies put together. They don't know what the original looked like.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way of knowing unless somebody like took some records.
And there's
of
shit that. Missing. Some of them, there's a scene where a guy comes out of a cave and talks to you, but there's no audio. And he sits there to talk, and they don't know what that was.
Yeah.
Some edits have that taken out. Somebody must have been in the silent film era, would have done a voiceover, a live voiceover at that point. But then they changed it from black and white silent film to fucking a hand colored talkie. And there were several different versions of it from the very beginning running at the same time. That's weird when you think about it. They don't know the original Phantom of the Opera. They don't know what it was.
Well, that happened with a lot of stuff. Well, silent movies, some silent movies, like I think I'm thinking of like London After Midnight and stuff like that, where it's like they just know the title and the posters and some stills, but they don't know where the movie is. Like the movie's lost. They don't have it.
Yeah.
Somebody said, Alien from L.A. Yeah. That was the one with Kathy Ireland. That was on Mystery Science Theater. It's a good Mystery Science Theater episode. That movie is like fucking terrible, though. Pat says, off topic, but is the original ending of Little Shop of Horrors on YouTube? Yes, it is. Because we did a review of it, which is going up Thursday if you're a patron, Friday if you're not. And we talk about that at length, and I actually talk about what the original ending was like. If you've seen the off-Broadway play, it's that ending, but they shot that for the movie, but test audiences didn't like it because it wasn't a happy ending. So, you know. But Charlie Watts died. He was 80 years old. Yeah, somebody said Charlie Watts died and Keith Richards is still alive. Keith Richards never gonna fucking die, man.
He's pickled.
I can't. He's got to be at this point.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were talking about alcohol aging. You know, I'm like, well, it seems like if you drink a really lot, then it'll like has a preservative effect.
You said the Tangerine Dream did the sound, the score for this, and it was a great fucking score. I loved it, and it's like it's back in style. This sound, the kids fucking love it. You could put this score to a new movie and give it that same kind of tone. And this does have a lot of pink in it, a lot of fucking blue in the sky and shit.
Yeah.
It looks just like one of these fucking...
Well, that's what a lot of the movies nowadays are just like harkening back to.
Going back to that's good. Now, there was another movie that Tangerine Dream did the soundtrack for. They did it for a lot of them.
Yeah.
But I don't see if you guys remember this. It was called Thief. And I think it had Caan in it. James Caan, I think, was a star in it. And I remember it as a kid. I remember liking it, but I don't remember anything about it. And I haven't seen it in a long time. But if you guys think that's a good movie, drop it a comment in there, and maybe I'll get that.
Well, you can probably like look it up somewhere.
I remember it being good.
I mean, look it up on a streaming service, because it's like if it's not you know, if it's a situation like Trancers where you thought it was a good movie, then you started watching it, and then you're like, what the fuck? This is terrible.
It's about a professional, like, safecracker, and he's being hired to fucking get into this vault, and he has to go through this fucking bizarre-ass way. But I don't remember all the details. I just remember him with goggles and fucking trying to weld through and cut through things with torches and shit.
Louis says it's excellent.
Is it excellent?
I might have seen it. It sounds kind of familiar when you're talking about it.
And fucking Tangerine Dream did the fucking score.
Did they do the score for Legend? I want to say. I kind of feel like they might have. I wanted to say a little bit, too, about...
Yeah, they're all saying it's a great movie.
Yeah. Because here's... I was going to say something about Kathryn Bigelow, because, like I said, it's interesting that she started her directing career in horror, even though that wasn't originally her intention. Like I said, she wanted to make a Western, but nobody would give her money to make a Western, so she made, like, a vampire Western. And obviously, I think most people know she went on to win an Oscar later on for The Hurt Locker. She also made Zero Dark Thirty. She made Strange Days, which is actually a pretty decent movie. Point Break, which a lot of people like. K-19, The Widowmaker, with Harrison Ford was in that. You know what I found out today that I did not know? Do you remember the video... When did this come out? 87, I want to say. The New Order song, Touched by the Hand of God. And the video is like a parody of like a hair metal. They show it at Ibar sometimes, and it's like, it makes me laugh every time. Yeah. Kathryn Bigelow directed that video. I just found that out today, and I was just like delighted, because I've always really, like, that video always fucking cracks me up, because it's funny, if you know anything about New Order, like, seeing them all dressed up like 80s glam metal and like pretending that they're like doing like and singing but Touched by the Hand of God, like this that kind of like techno-y pop song.
You guys,
and it's
remember,
just, it's funny as shit.
If you guys remember Thief, there was another one I was trying to remind Jenny of that I remember too. It was a gangster movie about kind of like a retired girlfriend of a gangster. She's like in her 50s or something, and she ends up saving a little boy who lived next door whose family got whacked. It was called Gloria, and it's kind of like The Professional. This fucking chick, older chick, protecting this little boy, trying to keep him from getting killed, and they run off together. She saves him. It's called Gloria. I remember it being really good, but I think
I might have seen that on cable. That sounds kind of familiar also.
I don't know if my memory is accurate, but I remember liking it. It was some blonde chick. She's probably 50-something, and he's probably about 5, and she's trying to protect him from the mob. She's the girlfriend of a mob, like a retired girlfriend. She got too old to be a girlfriend, so he had to retire her.
And get a younger one.
But she's living in luxury in a way. She's kind of living in a, she's living okay, though, in New York, you know. Fucking, he takes care of her. And I remembered it being really good. I was considering seeing that one, too.
Yeah, Sheila Ann said she's seen it. Gloria with Gina Roland, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I've seen that.
I remember it being good.
I'm pretty sure I've seen that. It sounds so familiar. Because I saw so much shit, like, on, you know, in the mid to late 80s, like, early 90s. Like, I saw so much shit on cable that it's like, I feel like... every time you bring up a movie and kind of talk, I'm like, man, that kind of sounds familiar too. So I might have seen that.
I remember it kind of being like the movie The Professional, where you had the fucking assassin who was protecting the little girl. I remember it being kind of like that, but it was like the roles were reversed.
Yeah, Sheila Ann said that she was married. Kathryn Bigelow, presumably, was married to the director of Titanic. Yeah, she was married to James Cameron. I think they were only married for a few years, though. And when she made this movie, I think she knew James Cameron at this time, but they weren't married yet. But this was like, this was like her directorial debut. So it's like, it's cool that she started out in horror, you know.
They also mentioned the movie The Keep. That was another one I got to see again.
I put that one in the Patreon poll last week, but it didn't win. You can rent it on Amazon Prime. I think it's $2.99 or $3.99.
The Nazis bust into this damn stone fucking fortress, and in there is a damn golem.
Yeah.
A Jewish golem. Yeah. And it fucks the Nazis up. It told them not to go in there.
They wouldn't fucking listen. They don't listen.
Well, they had some kind of silver, kind of like a cross. It looked more like a T. Some kind of runic things all around it. It might have been something Hebrew. They were silver embedded into the walls, and they removed one of them because it was worth money.
Yeah,
and
of course.
It got out.
They're like, woo, cha-ching.
Yeah, those things were holding it in there. It's pretty fucking cool.
Dumbass Nazis.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I've actually been wanting to do a movie retrospective on that for a while. I mean, like I said, ever since we kind of expanded out the matinee live streams to do like old movies too. Because remember, for a long time, for whatever reason, we were just doing new movies on matinee and then saving the old ones for movie retrospectives. And I was like, why bother doing that? Because there's so many. I have this massive, massive list of not only new movies, but I have a massiver list of old movies that I want to talk about that people have requested that I want to do. And it's like, we're never, ever going to live long enough to review all these movies unless we go back and do some of these older ones.
Yeah.
So if you want to do The Keep at some point, like next week or whatever, we can do that. Because like I said, I put it in the Patreon poll, I think, last week, but it didn't win.
That's one of them that I want to have.
And I knew that you really liked that movie, so it's like, I definitely wanted to. I'm pretty sure I looked it up, and it's, I think you can rent it on Amazon Prime, and I think it's $2.99 or $3.99.
That's funny.
Or something.
It's so tempting because that's just cheap to watch. But some of these ones, I want to own them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But we'll work it out.
Yeah. But seriously, if you... Okay, so when I was talking about Near Dark, I didn't say exactly what happened at the end. I just asked you if you thought the ending was a cop-out. I was going to say what happened at the end so we could talk about it. But in some ways, I feel like there's a lot of people that haven't seen it. Because like I said, it seems like one of those movies that even though it's awesome... It kind of flew under the radar. I think a lot of that was to do with, one, because of the marketing budget, because, you know, of Dino De Laurentiis' company going under around the same time, and also because of Lost Boys coming out a couple months before and kind of, like, being a big hit and being essentially the same story, even though, like I said, the approach of it is completely, completely different. So even though... on the surface, it's like the same story as The Lost Boys, kind of. Just the way that it's like tonally, it's completely, completely different. It's more, like I said, it's more like a Western scuzzy sort of Hitcher type thing, more than a glammy rock and roll type thing.
Louis in there saying that Thief has a lot of elements of the movie Heat in it.
Yeah.
Which I liked Heat, even though certain parts of Heat I thought were kind of slow. It was still an okay movie. Heat was really good in the context of the day that it came out. I would imagine had I seen it when it came out, I would have really been blown away.
I saw it in the theater.
But by today's standards, there's so many good movies and so many good crime series that you can see since this. You know what I mean? Where it's kind of stolen the thunder. Going back and seeing it isn't probably as good as if you had saw it when it came out.
Well, that's what's kind of like, in a way that's like bad, but in a way it's good because... You thinking, because I'm not one of those people, it's like, no, they don't make good movies anymore, blah, 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 like all this good stuff. It's like every time, every era has good shit. And honestly, there's so much good shit nowadays, particularly as like series and stuff. There's great movies nowadays too, but there's so much good shit. It's like an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah, series is where it's at, really, in general. You're gonna
Like that they've been able to like expand the storytelling because people are more receptive to that, nowadays.
But hey, going back in time... they had some good shit in the 70s, 80s, 90s. Everything.
Like I said, there's good...
like this movie here stood out. I was like, oh man, this is an excellent movie.
And I told him afterward, because I've been bugging him to watch this one. And then I was like, it was kind of hard to get hold of. And then finally Shudder added it. And I was like, woohoo, we're finally going to do this. And so like after he watched it, he's like, I can't believe I never fucking saw that. He's like, that's an amazing movie. And I'm like, see, I knew. I was like, this is exactly the type of movie. It's like right up your alley. And I just could not believe that you had not seen it.
I was 20 minutes into it going, this is a great movie.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Just the soundtrack.
I mean, just the way it looks. It looks like a Western. Like it's just very, like it's all dusty and sunset-y. And it's
the sun sets with the orange and the pink and then the fucking... new wave fucking score in the back, and it just they got this one right. They got this one right. And just the visual tone of the movie where it'd be dark and light at the same time. It just looks, it's good. You know what I mean? Really good. It's just kind of, there's an element of nostalgia to it because of that score, but it's fresh. You could put that score in a movie today and fucking people would love it.
Yeah, like, because
they've been doing it.
Because I've seen recent movies that had a score that sounded very much like that.
Yeah, it just really kind of brings that movie up. It brings it alive.
Yeah.
And really, I'm hard on a movie when it comes to score. If you've got a shitty score, you just don't have a fucking movie.
It's interesting how much it matters.
It matters a lot.
Because I kind of feel like a lot of people don't think about it. It's something that a lot of reviewers don't even bring up unless it's really, really noticeable. But it can really, like, make... Because what the score sounds like really goes a long way toward what the tone is, like the mood that the movie evokes.
What you're supposed to feel.
Yeah, it really does, like, make a big...
Think about it. Alien 1 would not be that movie without that fucking score.
And I think in horror and sci-fi, it's even more important than it is in other genres. I don't know, that's my opinion. Yeah. I don't know if anybody wants to argue with me about it, but...
Alien 1 would not be a movie without that score. Yeah. Imagine if you had a 70s fucking funk fucking sound or fucking rock or something.
It just imagined Alien with a 70s funk score.
It would fuck that movie up. Well, did you know that originally Star Wars was going to have a fucking disco?
I had heard that.
A disco.
Can you imagine?
The movie would have bombed and been forgotten. It has to have a classical fucking score.
Yeah, because that kind of stuff, I mean, for that type of epic movie, you need a timeless.
Yeah.
You can't have something that will specifically date it to a particular time.
Without that fucking score, Alien 1 would have flopped.
Yeah.
That's what made that fucking movie. That's what made that movie. That's what gave that movie the intensity and that's what made it eerie and scary. And it's not really music.
Yeah.
Kinda. It's music. And then same thing with fucking The Thing. The first thing that boom, boom.
Yeah.
Boom, boom. Boom, boom.
Yeah.
It's just that.
Yeah.
But that's all you need.
Well, John Carpenter does his own scores for that. He did Halloween, which, of course, is iconic.
Yep.
A lot of his stuff is very simple, but a lot of this stuff is, simple is sometimes more effective, depending on what you're doing or what you're trying to evoke. And it's like I said, if you don't think, like, score or sound effects or anything like that matter that much, watch a horror movie with the volume down. See how scary that shit is. It's not. Somebody said, Hugo said, even in the 2000s, when I was looking for Near Dark on DVD, nobody knew about it. I feel like it's one of those kind of like lost classic type of things. He says there's DVD and Blu-rays of it, but I think the Blu-ray is out of print. I kind of feel like it's because Amazon, they had like a really nice special edition Blu-ray that had a DVD and a Blu-ray on it, but they didn't have one for US region 1. That's region 1, right? They had a region 2 one. And they had one that was French language and one that was German language, but they didn't have an American one. But I did like the new title, art that they have. Like, the cover art is nice. I like that. It's very kind of stylized, and I thought it was Bill Paxton. Like, even though, because everybody loves Bill Paxton, everybody loves Lance Henriksen, so obviously they're going to get, all the poster FaceTime, they're going to put them on the poster really big because they're like the selling point, even though they're not really the star of the movie. I mean, they are, but they're not like the main character. Like Adrian Pazdar, that guy from that's playing Caleb, he's kind of the main character. But
yeah, we'll be reviewing more Hammer Flicks.
Oh yeah, I definitely want to do more Hammer Flicks. I mean, there's so many. Like I said, I have a humongous. I have a list like new movies over here, like new meaning like 2010 forward, and then I have old movies like over here, and it's just like this huge list. Like some of them I'm gonna do like on my show, especially if it's something that's kind of arty farty or something you don't really give a shit about. But I just have a massive list, and then there's like some really obvious movies that I haven't done yet, which I can't believe. But I was just looking at my list today, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I haven't done that one or that one or that one. So I don't know. I'll get around to it.
Well, we've made this an hour, though, and I think we've said all we can say about this movie. This movie was a fucking fantastic movie. Now I got to have it.
Yeah. It's on Shudder right now.
Yeah.
Although I've heard that it's not going to be on Shudder for much longer.
Yeah.
So if you don't have Shudder, you might want to watch it. I think it's on Amazon Prime, too, but you might have to pay for it like a buck or two.
I think people are saying it's hard to find this on Blu-ray.
That's what I was just saying. That it's like, I just saw like a European one.
They couldn't even find it on DVD.
Yeah, it's like, because I was going to do it, because I have the Amazon storefront, so a lot of times when we review a movie, I'll put it in the storefront, and I was looking for it earlier today. I'm like, what the fuck? They only have like a European special, and the special edition they have in Europe is like really nice, but we don't have one, so, somebody needs to get on that.
Well,
Hey Scream Factory.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like I said, it might be a rights issue because I did maybe. Kind of feel like there was a lot of... That's why it doesn't turn up anywhere.
Yeah, Scream Factory ought to get on that bitch.
Until Shudder got it, it was like really even hard to find it to stream anyplace.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you want to see it, like I said, I'm pretty sure it's on Amazon Prime. You might have to pay a couple bucks, but it's on Shudder at least until the end of this month, maybe. So you might want to check it out before it goes anyplace. If you're into vampire movies and you haven't seen it, if you're into 80s horror and you haven't seen it, or if you're into Catherine Bigelow's movies and you haven't seen it, you want to see her first one, here it is, and it's like, and it's really, really good.
Lost classic, man, up there with T1 and fucking Aliens 2. It's like that.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great movie. All right, so we will be back tomorrow. What's today's Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, so we'll be back for the Sidetrack show tomorrow night. Yeah. Woo! We'll be back tomorrow at 5 p.m. getting drunk and talking shit. Like we usually do on Wednesdays, wearing wigs, all that kind of stuff.
Fighting.
whacking each other with fucking... Yeah, there you go. It'll be that. It'll be super fun. We'll think of something to talk about. All right, so thanks everybody for dropping by, and we will see you guys tomorrow evening.